Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Never die. They just fade away. And like the old soldier of that ballad, I now close my military career and just fade away. An old soldier who tried to do his duty as God gave him the light to see that duty. Goodbye.
What's the matter with you?
I guess I just can't take it, sir.
What did you say?
It's my nerves, sir. I just can't stand the shelling anymore.
Your nerves? Well, hell, you're just a coward.
Shut up! We'd have a yellow bastard sitting here crying in front of these brave men who've been wounded in battle. Shut up! Don't admit this yellow bastard. Nothing wrong with him. We won't have. We're afraid to fight, stinking up this place of honor. You're going back to the front, my friend. You may get shot, you may get killed, but you're going up to the fighting. Either that or I'm going to stand you up in front of a firing squad. I ought to shoot you myself, bastard. Get him out of here. Send him up to the front. You hear me? You coward? We won't have cowards in my army.
So the community organizer today fired a great war hero, a true warrior, a true warrior. The man who was defending America was dismissed by the man who was stapling flyers to telephone poles over the years. The thin-skinned president who was never fired a Daisy BB gun apparently has fired General McChrystal. We have had a civilian coup of the United States military. All of the true warriors are being drummed out of the Corps, and all of the political officers are being left into the Corps. And that is because, let us put it to you this way, there are things afoot that are not being spoken about. General Stanley McChrystal is being persecuted for telling the truth. And the vermin in the media have been sharpening their knives all day long, eagerly anticipating the kill. The brain-dead apparatchik on MSNBC, Contessa Brewer, a ditz of the highest order, had the nerve to call General McChrystal and his aides a posse. And Andy Mitchell, you know her as Andrea Mitchell, we call her Andy Mitchell around here, declared that the general crossed the line of insubordination. And Joe Haystack, the congressman that Obama bribed, said McChrystal broke military code. And John McShane joined Lieberman to stab McChrystal in the back. John McCain joined Lindsey Graham, that strange creature from South Carolina, and Joe Lieberman, the whiner from Connecticut, and said McChrystal should be removed. And so it was the night of the short knives by the dwarfs in the political military establishment. I played for you today on the Savage Nation the speech by General MacArthur from 1951. He says old soldiers never die, they just fade away. General MacArthur was relieved of command by Truman, for criticizing Truman back in 1950. Remember, General MacArthur was one of the great ones. He conceived and executed a great amphibious assault at Incheon in Korea, for which he was hailed as a hero. 7 months later, Truman fired him for making public statements that contradicted the official policies of the U.S. government, especially with regard to Truman's order to restrict military interaction with the media. And so it's happened before. What's amazing to me and what's strangely difficult to understand is how a man of McChrystal's mindset a man who runs 7 miles a day, a man who takes one meal a day, a true Spartan warrior, a fourth-generation military man, how he would permit a lice-ridden vermin from Rolling Stone even near him, how he would admit a fetid drug addict from Rolling Stone to even interview him is beyond my comprehension. This is a product of the breakdown in the aid category. But make no mistake about it. We had a civilian coup today where the thin-skinned community organizer fired the real general to replace him with somebody who will knuckle under to the community organizer's staple gun. Remember, McChrystal is a real soldier. He graduated from West Point. He actually served in an Army Special Ops team in the first Gulf War, as opposed to the fakers who put a knife in our boys' back in the Marines and in the Army. He was the head of the team that killed Zarqawi. He has gone on many night missions, unheard of for generals. The man loves combat, went on night missions in Iraq, went on night missions while Obama was creeping around the nights of Chicago planning his coup. And all he said was a few objectionable things. I thought free speech was permitted in the United States of America. But I guess the old thin-skinned president in between golf games took offense at it. He criticized Biden, criticized Obama's handling of the war, criticized Hillary Clinton, and it's the soldier who gets fired. The White House has betrayed the troops time and time again. Obama betrayed the Navy SEALs. Obama betrayed Lieutenant Behenna. And now Obama's betrayed the leader of our forces in Afghanistan in the middle of a Kandahar offensive. This is Obama's way of undermining our military efforts overseas. He wants them out of there. And so he's taken out the one man who could save the war effort. What has occurred today is a civilian coup of the military. And because of it, our troops will pay the price of blood. 1-800-449-8255. How do you feel about General McChrystal being dismissed by the community organizer? And when I play you some of the sound bites, you're actually not going to believe what you're about to hear on the Savage Nation. You're not going to believe what you're about to hear. Stupid chicks on MSNBC, more snotty nonsense by chicks, calling General McChrystal and his aides a posse. Clip four, please.
Were you surprised at the level of access that your reporter, Michael Hastings, was able to get to General McChrystal and to his posse?
Stop right here. That's a one of the stupidest women crawling the gutters of Manhattan, Contessa Brewer of MSNBC. That's the kind of chick talk you'd expect on The View. That's some kind of chick talk you'd expect from Whoopi Goldberg. It's unbelievable. Now, if you were the enemy, the hardened Muslim enemy, would you be afraid of an America where the media is run by slutty chicks on television whose biggest problem is how to meet a man or what kind of shoes to buy? When they take out the warriors and they let the chattering classes take over, would you be afraid of America today when the number one general is dismissed by a community organizer who never fired anything but a Daisy BB gun? Excuse me, but a staple gun? Sorry, I was mistaken in that. I'm pretty sure Obama's never been allowed to touch a BB gun in his life. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Hawaii, Steve, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. As a former captain in the Marine Corps during Vietnam, I've been listening to this controversy all morning on talk radio, and I hear a lot of outraged people calling in talking about this oath, this famous oath that people have to give in the military to protect their commandant, to be a bow down in front of this dictator commandant. Well, I don't remember ever taking that oath, sir. When I took my oath, it was to defend the Constitution of the United States against foreign and domestic enemies, protect the people of this country. And to me, we have a domestic enemy, this administration.
I agree with you 100%, but remember, McChrystal was actually quite mild in his commentary about Biden and about Obama. He never really said very much. The fact of the matter is Obama does not want McChrystal there at all because McChrystal's the real McCoy, and it is said that Obama is very uncomfortable in a room full of real warriors. Did you read that?
Absolutely.
In other words, when Obama the faker, when Obama the imposter, when Obama the strange one, is in a room with real warriors, they say he gets very uncomfortable because he knows he doesn't belong there. The fact of the matter is there is no such rule, written or unwritten, where a general is supposed to be a martinet. And what's strange to me, Captain, is this. The phony liberals who said that during Hitler's period, if only the generals had stood up to Hitler and said something, the Holocaust could have been prevented. And now we have a general standing up and saying the most mild of things about this thin-skinned community organizing, Marxist, backstabbing, anti-American, and all of a sudden he's fired and they say, good for Obama. Good for Obama. This is a very big topic, a giant topic. It's the Savage Nation. If you've got a comment to make on this, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to Texas. Randy, you're up on the Savage Nation. Your opinion, please.
Michael, I believe that McChrystal did this on purpose. I believe it was a setup to expose Obama, to make the American people realize what's going on. There's no other way to do it. Nobody else could ever come up with a scheme like this, and now we all know, and you can talk about it.
Well, wait a minute. Talk about what? What are we talking about? We're talking about a thin-skinned community organizer of unknown origins who fires a war leader during a major offensive in Kandahar. What is it we're talking about? What actually are we talking about?
We are
that
losing.
Somebody dared say one word about this thin-skinned dictator and he gets fired? This is the America that the liberals want to live in?
We're losing the war in Afghanistan. The only way to expose this to the American people and get people outraged is for McChrystal to come out and do this and get the people on and against what's going on in the Obama administration, period.
Well, you know, McChrystal is a fourth-generation military man and a West Point graduate. You know that. No, you didn't know that. This is the real McCoy. You're dealing with a real Spartan warrior here. This is the real McCoy. Let me repeat it again. While the folks at MSNBC who were celebrating his removal were crawling the streets of New York at night looking for sex, he was on night missions in Iraq looking for our mortal enemies. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We are talking about the civilian coup today of the U.S. military, where the community organizer is allegedly fired General McChrystal on the eve of a major offensive of Kandahar. And we can talk about this for the next few days, and we will. But I'll bet that there are a lot of troops out there now thinking that if they call up Rolling Stone and tell them Obama is incompetent, they could also get a ticket home. You know, I mean, that's for sure. All they got to do is call up Rolling Stone, and there it is, a ticket home. The fact of the matter is the morale is finished now. And that's because the leadership is not there. Because the commander-in-chief is not a commander and he's not in chief. What's mostly killing morale in the U.S. armed forces is, along with a hopeless assignment in Afghanistan to begin with, is the doctrine of counterinsurgency, which makes our men fight with one hand constantly tied behind their backs. Either we are at war and want to defeat and squash the radical Muslim enemy, and we do it the way we know how with heavy weapons, and we get the hell out of there in plain English. Have you ever believed you'd wake up one day to the most powerful military on earth making men fight in hand-to-hand combat, and they tell them don't fire a gun unless you're sure you're not going to kill anybody? Would you believe it? We have weapons that can annihilate all of Afghanistan. It can be disappeared and turned into atoms. You don't want to do that. But you know where the pockets of the enemy are. For Christ's sakes, what the hell is wrong with this country? A crippled nation. Crippled at every level. And the president, Obama, is really a symptom. He's not the cause of all of this. He's a symptom of a crippled nation, a degenerate, destroyed, corrupt nation, immoral, corrupt, and crippled from top to bottom. I am an amateur student of history. I know what happened to Rome. I know that after 50 years of bad dictators who could not rule the country, they were corrupt, they were incompetent, Rome collapsed, and the Visigoths invaded Rome, and they divided up the spoils, they broke the nation. If you think that can't happen here, you're mistaken. Because the Visigoths are here. Make no mistake about it. They're coming over the border every day. They're the, well, let me stop right here. I'm in enough trouble as it is. The Visigoths are here. And the enemies of your freedom are here. Half of them are congressmen or senators. They're working for foreign powers, in my opinion. And I don't give a damn who tells me I'm wrong. Because I know I'm right. They're traitors. And that's why McChrystal, for the mild statements he made, mild statements, a few mild statements. That's why the thin-skinned one got rid of him, because he's a little petty martinet. He can't stand any criticism, because he's a weak man and he knows it. Michael, San Diego, your opinion. Go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, I'm Michael again. I spoke to you last week for an hour and 15 minutes. Thank you for having me again. I want to say, My hat's off to McChrystal. My hat's off to anyone that spits in the face of tyranny. Anyone that speaks the truth. Anyone that takes the light and shines it on what was the darkness of all these deeds that these people do, okay, that people don't know about.
Michael, what do you think would happen if you were a fourth-generation military man, a West Point graduate, a Spartan warrior who actually went out on night missions in Iraq when he didn't have to? He could have sat in his behind like the rest of the fake generals do. And then you wake up and you see these cowards, these communists, these pacifists, these degenerates from Harvard running the military. What would you do?
Well, let me tell you something. My people have been here since 1690 on one side of my family, and they fought in every war. And I woke up this morning, and I realized that everything they fought for, okay, was being swept away in a wave of tyranny. Okay, and what would
Did you hear the latest rumor of what the thin-skinned one is going to do? The thin-skinned one is gonna allegedly grant an executive order granting amnesty to the illegal aliens with the sweep of a pen, telling the American people to drop dead.
Well, and yes, and telling the American people they're not Americans anymore. They're part of the North American Union. Let me tell you something. If there's any people out there with any gumption left, okay, if the spirit of Audie Murphy, okay, Robert E. Lee, the greatest generals that ever were, Washington, if you're out there anywheres, you better stand up and you better get ready to fight against what's coming, okay, because it's coming.
Well, I'll tell you what's bothering me more than the McChrystal resignation itself, which is what I heard yesterday from Secretary Robert Gates. I don't know if you heard my show, but I was talking about how astonishing it is the defense secretary, when asked about Iran, said, I don't even want to go there about containing Iran. This is the same defense secretary who, after the Fort Hood massacre, said, I don't even want to go there when asked if it was an act of Islamic terror. And I said to myself, something is wrong with this picture. It's as though the top leadership has capitulated to the enemy already. That's what worries me. Then the next day we read that McChrystal is out. I think that something much bigger than this is underneath the surface. And I am terrified that if they eliminate the Marine Corps, which is what they're alleging they're going to do, because it's the last bastion of pure warriors, we're going to have Obama's private army.
Savage.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded.
Sieg Heil. Sieg Heil. We're in a civilian coup right now. There is a comprehensive amnesty threat circulating, and if you think it's just rumored, you're crazy. Several senators have sent a letter to the dictator on the rumor that the dictator would provide a mass amnesty for the nation's 30 million illegal aliens. They sent a letter to the dictator today asking the dictator to clarify whether he's going to do this, use of deferred action or parole for illegal aliens. Here is the text of the letter signed by Senators Grassley, Hatch, Vitter, Bunning, Chambliss, Isaacson, Inhofe, and Cochran. Maybe soon they'll be arrested by the dictator. And the empty skirts in MSNBC can celebrate the arrest of U.S. senators next. An executive order amnesty. Said this for a long period of time now. In order to justify martial law. I believe we are at that point. And I believe it could happen momentarily. I think that this resignation of McChrystal or this firing of McChrystal is a symptom. There's much more going on below the surface. And I'm not privy to what is going on below the surface, but I can certainly try to put two and two together. And it's not a very pretty picture, by the way. Yeah, we can talk about McChrystal as though it occurred in a vacuum, but it didn't occur in a vacuum. The general spoke out, not in a vacuum. No, not at all. Something's wrong. Something is wrong with this picture. Something is wrong with this whole picture. And I believe that Obama wants to stir the pot in order to turn one again the other. Black against white against black. Hispanic against white against Hispanic. Republican against Democrat against Republican. This man, make no mistake about it, is a Marxist revolutionary. And this man will do anything to consolidate his power. I believe the president is a naked Marxist. Now, I happen to have studied the birth of communism in China. And what you don't know about the birth of communism in China is anything about it. You don't know how it occurred. And I don't have the time, nor do you have the desire to listen to the whole story. But the fact of the matter is the communists came to power in China during a time of great social and economic upheaval. Didn't come out of China itself. They adopted something outside of traditional Chinese culture. They opposed the Confucian doctrine of the middle way. And eager to take a shortcut, the communists in China advocated the destruction of everything traditional. The radicals who brought about communism in China rejected all of the middle way and all of the traditional way. And like people who turn to any available doctor in times of illness, the early communists in China looked outside China for a solution. When the British and French styles failed, they switched to the Russian method. And they took the Russian method for the illness of the Chinese people in the hope that China would quickly become strong. And what they did was, is they adopted the Russian communist doctrine, the theory of Marxism-Leninism. They thought they could save the country and its people with Marxism-Leninism. They introduced communism, which was a completely foreign concept, into China. And that is how it happened. Mao Zedong, also known as Mao Zedong, were one of the original 13 who brought communist Marxism into China. And according to those who have studied it, they say that it's unclear whether the founders of the Communist Party of China were aware at the time that the deity that they had introduced from the Soviet Union was in reality an evil specter, and that the remedy they sought for strengthening China was actually a deadly poison. And the reason I mention this, is because some of the dialectics of that, those activities are occurring right now in the United States of America by diehard Leninists, Marxists, Maoists from some of America's most despicable ghettos of universities, where some of the lowest thoughts occur amongst the American people. People who consider themselves better than the rest of us, who are actually below most of us. A prostitute is less to be feared than a Harvard professor of sociology. A prostitute in the streets of Oakland is less to be feared than a certain professor at the University of California at Berkeley, who was once a secretary for Bill Clinton, a man whose feet do not touch the ground. So there's much more going on than just McChrystal right now. Jeff in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
It's an honor to speak to you, sir. I've listened to you for years, and you have one big fan in Brooklyn, New York. I was really moved by what happened with General McChrystal. I think possibly at the worst was an error in judgment. But beyond that, the picture, as you say, is much, much larger. But after thinking about it a little bit, I'm very happy that this is happening, because General McChrystal is the face of success. He's the face of a patriot. President Obama is not the face of a patriot. If anything...
Right. If the American people were to vote on this issue, who do you trust more, McChrystal or Obama? Well, I guarantee it'd be 90-1 with McChrystal, correct?
Yes, yes.
He is fourth generation U.S. military and a graduate of West Point. At least we know where he was born.
Yep.
We know where his birth certificate resides.
Chaplain, Michigan.
And we know where his loyalties lie. And most of us can't say that for the president, can we?
No, we can't.
We have a rogue presidency that is virtually out of control right now. And I'll let it go at that. Chicago, Pete, you're up on the Savage Nation from WIND from the Windy City.
Thanks for taking my call. My comment is that a man like General McChrystal would not have, he has too much honor to fall on his sword, like a caller a few minutes ago said. I believe he was set up by some suck up an aide of his, and
why would he let a degenerate from Rolling Stone magazine, a drug toting degenerate anti-American from Rolling Stone near him? How did that happen?
He's a propaganda. You know, he's trying to get his word out, and he was set up. Someone had his question was the question.
We don't know, but here's I have the article right here. It says Paris is the most anti-McChrystal city you can imagine. The general hates fancy restaurants. Rejecting any place with candles on the table is too Gucci. He prefers Bud Light Lime, his favorite beer, to Bordeaux. Talladega Nights, his favorite movie, to Jean-Luc Godard. Besides, the public eye has never been a place where McChrystal felt comfortable. Before President Obama put him in charge of the war in Afghanistan, he spent 5 years running the Pentagon's most secretive black ops. Did you hear that? While Obama was plotting the takeover of America, he was going on night missions. And take a look who they support in the media. At age 55, he is gaunt and lean, not unlike an older version of Christian Bale in Rescue Dawn. His slate blue eyes have the unsettling ability to drill down when they lock on you. If you've disappointed him, they can destroy your soul without the need for him to raise his voice. McChrystal said, I'd rather have my butt kicked by a room full of people than go out to this dinner. You hear this? He pauses and says, unfortunately, no one in this room could do it. With that, he's out the door. Who's he going to dinner with, I ask one of his aides. Some French minister, the aide tells me. And he couldn't stand him. You want to hear more about Biden? Are you asking about Vice President Biden, McChrystal says with a laugh. Who's that? Biden, suggests the top advisor. Did you say bite me? Now that's a reason to ask him to be dismissed? Because the frat boy was offended as well? Biden the frat boy? The guy who was playing on a lawn with squirt guns 2 weeks ago? That's your idea of a vice president in a time of war? Squirt guns on a lawn? Well, I could read more from it. The general staff is a handpicked collection of killers, says the drug-taking degenerate from Rolling Stone magazine. Well, I mean, there's more to this. Just more to it. It's heartbreaking. From West Point, we have one man. From the streets of Punahou, we have another. Or the name of the street in Indonesia, I don't know. By the way, his father was a general, compared to Obama's father, who was not a general. Did you know that? Did you know that he accumulated more than 100 hours of demerits for drinking, partying, and insubordination? He's my kind of guy. He's a real man. Went to Vietnam. Went to the Gulf War. Rolled in a special forces school. Became a regimental commander of the 3rd Ranger Battalion in 1986. It was a dangerous position even in peacetime. Nearly 24 Rangers were killed in training accidents during the 80s. Most soldiers who want to climb the ranks to general don't go into the Rangers. Instead, they basically shaft other men who are out in the field. Those are the kind of generals Obama likes, the type who give court-martials to the real warriors. That's his kind of guy. Well, there's more to this story. There's more to the story. Went to Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Worked at the CFR, Council on Foreign Relations. One after the other. There's a lot of things about him that are tremendously admirable. A lot of things that make him hated by the cowards and the communists in the military-industrial complex. They say where General Petraeus is a kind of a dweeb, a teacher's pet with the Ranger's tab, McChrystal is a snake-eating rebel, a Jedi commander, as Newsweek called him. He didn't care when his teenage son came home with blue hair and a mohawk. He speaks his mind with a candor rare for a high-ranking official. He went out on dozens of nighttime raids during his time in Iraq, unprecedented for a top commander, and turned up on missions unannounced with almost no entourage. They say the lads love Stan McChrystal, says a British officer who serves in Kabul. You'd be out in somewhere Iraq, and someone would take a knee beside you, and a corporal would be like, who is that? And it's Stan McChrystal. So that's the man that Obama hates. That's the man that Obama hates. That's the man that the vermin in the media are calling a runaway general. That's the man who the cowards and the degenerates and the drug addicts are now vilifying. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Americans traditionally love to fight. All real Americans love the sting of battle. When you were kids, you all admired the champion marble shooter, the fastest runner, big league ball players, the toughest boxer. Americans love a winner and will not tolerate a loser. That's why Americans have never lost and will never lose a war, because the very thought of losing is hateful to America.
Of course, that was then, this is now. It all changed in Korea, then Vietnam, and now we're stuck and bogged down in Afghanistan with a war that's unwinnable. Now, I say it's unwinnable. I know many of you are going to consider that defeatism. And I'm going to play armchair general for 1 minute, and I'm going to have to start with the history. It'll take about 1 minute or less. If you're bored, I apologize in advance. I can make it real simple and say that the British lost three wars against the Afghans, and the Soviets lost a major war against the Afghans. After killing a million people, the Soviets were defeated, and the Soviet Empire collapsed. Are we now following in the Soviet footsteps? Could this country follow in the Soviet footsteps, be broken in Afghanistan, and break apart? Well, anything is possible with this weak leader that we have, who has just conducted a civilian coup. There's no question that there's great social upheaval right now as a result of this thin-skinned president, this incompetent, the man who can handle nothing correctly, from the oil spill to health care to business to taxation to family values, which are non-existent in his White House, to religious values, which are non-existent in his White House. There is nothing he has done that is traditionally American. Everything he has done is anti-traditional. Nothing he has done is even the Confucian middle way, by the way. I want you to think about what I just said. Let's say you're not a traditionalist and you don't like hearing the word tradition. How about if you'd like to be a Taoist, the middle way? He's not even a Confucian, where the middle way was the road. Don't you understand what you have there in the White House? You don't understand that Axelrod's a lifetime left-wing radical communist, a street thug? You don't understand what you have there? It's right in front of your eyes, you idiots, you morons who put him in office. You idiots got what you deserved. And if you think he's finished, you're mistaken. He's just getting wound up. He is just getting wound up. He's only on first base. He's got a long way to go to home plate. He's not even on second base yet with what he has in mind for you, your nation, and your children's children. And if you think McChrystal is the whole story, you are mistaken. McChrystal is a symptom of what Obama has in mind for you. Now, I'm not saying he's all bad. I'm just saying he's the worst president America's ever had. I'm saying he's the most incompetent, devious, divisive president America's ever had. I think that's quite enough. And now he's firing the general who he put in charge of the Afghanistan disaster because the general said some unkind words about him and old Biden, the frat boy who used a water gun on his own lawn not 2 weeks ago. Can you imagine a vice president at a time of war giggling on a lawn in Maryland with a water gun, squirting other men with grown-ups from Harvard with a water gun while men are actually fighting and dying in Afghanistan? This brings up a bigger question. Why are we in Afghanistan? This is nothing new to this show. I've asked for 2 years, why are we in Afghanistan? And I've said for 2 years, if you don't define the mission, then get out of there. Now, I keep hearing that we can't permit Al-Qaeda to have a safe haven from which to launch attacks on us. I disagree. I think the opposite is true. I think we should leave, create a vacuum, and let all of the vermin of the world come into Afghanistan and create a safe haven. Let them come in from Brooklyn and Dearborn and Los Angeles and San Francisco and Bahrain and the Caucasus. Let them come in from around the world like the cockroaches that they are, and then send in raid. Once they're all in one place, send in raid. Right now we can't win because they're afraid of killing civilians. McChrystal has a hands-off counterinsurgency proposal that he's been following in Afghanistan, and it's gotten him nowhere. He even said to one of his subordinates, what do you want us to do? We can't kill everybody here. The Russians killed a million people, and they lost. So what do you want us to do? So he continues with a go-slow approach. Winning hearts and minds, he said, is a cold-blooded thing, McChrystal says. And he says, you can't kill your way out of Afghanistan. The Russians killed 1 million Afghans, and that didn't work, said McChrystal. So he doesn't know exactly what to do. He says, you want to wipe the population out here and resettle it? He said, of course not. So the guy underneath him says that under the rules, any insurgent who doesn't have a weapon is immediately assumed to be a civilian. McChrystal says that's the way this game is. It's complex. I can't just decide, he says. It's skirts and skins, shirts and skins, and we'll kill all the shirts. So the fact of the matter is McChrystal was given a no-win situation. And that is because Obama really didn't want to win in Afghanistan. Don't you get that? He didn't even want to be in Afghanistan, which unto itself is worthy of discussion. Why are we in Afghanistan? I don't believe it's worth one American's life for those ungrateful people. The Iraqis were the most ungrateful, liberated people on the planet. We liberated 20 million of those people from the yoke of tyranny. We didn't even get a free barrel of oil out of the deal. Why were there no reparations? Bush lied. Bush said there'd be reparations. We'd be paid back for the war. Well, you know Bush was a liar. How come they never gave us oil? They gave the contracts to their oil fields to China. How did that happen? That's because you have traitors in Congress who let it happen. So now we're in Afghanistan. More men are dying. More of our national treasure is going up in smoke. We are bankrupt. Why are we in Afghanistan? No one can answer the question. To make sure that Karzai and his gang can pillage the countryside? Why are we in Afghanistan? So maybe it's a good thing that he fired McChrystal. Maybe now the American people will ask, well, duh, why are we there at all? The answer is nobody seems to know why the hell we're there, other than the military-industrial complex wants us there, because there's trillions of dollars being made on this war, as there were trillions of dollars made on the last war. This is what corruption is called, folks. Corruption, corruption, corruption.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You talk to the president?
I've talked to the president since I've been here once on a VTC.
You talked to him once in 70 days?
That's correct.
Can you imagine ever saying to the president of the United States, sir, we just can't do it?
Yes, I can. And if I felt that way, the day I feel that way, the day I'm sure I feel that way, I'll tell him that.
So the true blue gets shot down by the all red. Obama versus the general. You know, it's interesting how prescient I am. Do you remember what I said to you on Monday? That I was thinking over the illness that I had and over the weekend, that it's unprecedented that one man can have so much power. And it didn't start with Obama. I said there's too much power in the executive. I'm not the first to ever say that. How in the world can a man who is a community organizer know the first thing about the military? The answer is he can't. We know he knows nothing about business because he's never run one. We know he knows nothing about the military because he never was in it. We know he knows nothing about healthcare because he's not a doctor. We know he knows nothing about energy because he was never in the energy field. In fact, when you analyze it, Obama specialized in nothing but BS, in shuffling papers and deceiving people. So the great deceiver now is offended because the general, the real general, the true blue, criticized him in a rather benign way. Him and Biden, the squirt gun guy. Joe Biden, the water gun man. 2 weeks ago, Joe Biden was seen on the lawn of his house in Maryland running around squealing with some boys from Harvard with water guns. Can you believe you're living in a country like this? And now the general is out. the man who was leading the Afghan mission. We don't even know why we're in Afghanistan. The soldiers don't know why we're in Afghanistan. I've spoken to guys who are active duty, some of whom fly jets. They don't even know why they're there. No one knows why they're there. Obama doesn't know why we're there. McChrystal doesn't know why we're there. In fact, I think the only person who actually knows why we are in Afghanistan, to turn it into a bigger discussion than McChrystal versus the red one, would be General Dwight D. Eisenhower, who warned us about the military-industrial complex.
Government. Oh, God. We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
That was General Dwight D. Eisenhower, Supreme Allied Commander of World War II, who warned in the 1950s exactly what was coming and exactly what we've had in this country for the last 50 years, which is the rise of the military-industrial complex. And I believe that they are behind both the Iraq War and the Afghan War. Can anyone listening to this show tell me any benefit from the Iraq War? You liberated 20 million Iraqis, and how'd that work out? How'd that work out for America? Let's see, we got oil from them, and we got reparations, and I don't think so. So how'd that work out, liberating those Iraqis? They're very grateful people. And now what? Who are we liberating the Afghanis from? Themselves? We're liberating Karzai's family so they can sack the countryside? I mean, what the hell are we doing there? So now we can look at the microcosm. General says a few things about the squirt gun vice president and the imposter president. And the communists from Harvard go crazy in the midst of their drinking and their sexing and they're running around and they're texting each other. They go, ooh, 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 the general said something. Who is he? I don't like him. Who is he? Ooh, get rid of him. Ooh. And the vermin in the media on MSNBC, the most they do at night, prowling the streets drunk looking for sex. And in the morning they call McChrystal and his war heroes a posse. That's the country you're living in. That's the country you're living in. So McChrystal's finished. And now we're talking about a bigger picture, which is Afghanistan. Why are we in Afghanistan? I'll give you my opinion again. For 2 cents worth, whatever it's worth. 5 cents, 2 cents, a gold doubloon, gold coin. Gold doubloon. For one gold doubloon, I'll give you my opinion. And here it is. I say get out of Afghanistan, create a vacuum, let Al-Qaeda rush in from around the world, from Dearborn, from Brooklyn, from Paris, from Rome, from Jerusalem, wherever they may be. Let them rush into Afghanistan and celebrate and chant Allah Akbar. Let them erect a temple to their hate and let them plan the overthrow of the West. And then when enough of them are there, treat them the way we treated the Germans and the Japanese in World War II. Treat them to the inferno they've been asking for. That's the only thing that's going to work, because you can't win in a counterinsurgency war. It didn't work in Vietnam. It did not really work in Vietnam, this whole concept of a one hand behind your back. How can it work when you have a powerful military and you put men in hand-to-hand combat and you say, tie one hand behind your back? I mean, I'm giving you common sense. I'm being an armchair general for now. Doesn't matter that I didn't serve in the military. I am an analytical man. I can figure things out. There are people who did serve in the military who don't know their behinds from their elbows. So what's the difference? Take a look at that general who ran for the presidency. He's a genius. Whatever the hell his name was, Wesley Clark, you think he's a great genius? How many other people served in the military who are not worth a damn when it comes to America and patriotism? So don't tell me because they served in the military they're necessarily smarter than everybody else. And also don't tell me that because I didn't serve in the military, I have no right to render an opinion. Most of America never served in the military, yet we all have an opinion. So I'll give you mine if you don't mind. I'll give you a little more of mine. I say get the hell out of Afghanistan now. And let Al-Qaeda rush into that vacuum. Let them agglutinate like the viruses that they are. Let them come from afar, from Dearborn, from Los Angeles, from San Francisco, from Jerusalem, from Syria, from Assyria, from Turkey, from Palestine, from the Caucasus. Let them come from around the world until there's millions of them there, and they finally have their homeland. And then I say treat them to the inferno they've been begging for, so they can all share in those 32 virgins. we are at war or we're not at war? Well, apparently we're at war, but we have people that don't understand that we're at war. As far as I know, there's never been a declaration of war. Isn't it interesting? We have a big debate today on America and talk radio about a general being dismissed by an imposter president, a real general, a fourth-generation military guy who graduated West Point, who actually served in combat, a man who went on night missions when he didn't have to go on them while Obama was going on night missions to take over America. This man was going on night missions to kill our worst enemies. Isn't it interesting that that's what we're talking about now? But the bigger picture is, why are we in Afghanistan? And this man has one opinion, which is we don't belong there. It was a mistake to begin with. Get out of there now. Let them take it. Let them kick Karzai out. Let them go back to San Francisco and open a rug shop on Grant Avenue. Or let them open an Afghani restaurant that serves camel feet. It doesn't matter to me. So, as I say, let them have a safe haven. I don't understand that thinking. They shouldn't have a safe haven. We've been told we can't win a counterinsurgency. We can't bomb them because we'll kill innocent women and children. All right. So, when they have a nation of their own, like the Germans had a nation of their own, and the Japanese had a nation of their own, and they threatened our survival, if they actually threaten our survival from that safe haven, then use the weapons that we have. What's wrong with my logic? Anyone disagree with me or what? Or do you want to just talk about McChrystal? We know McChrystal is the real McCoy, the true blue American. We know where he was born. We know what family he came from. We know his father was a general. We understand that he has a real birth certificate. We know that his loyalties are with the U.S. Constitution. We cannot say any of the above about our president. I'll be right back.
Savage.
What is the president's reaction to the incendiary comments by General McChrystal and his aides, and has the president spoken to the general about this yet?
The president has not spoken with General McChrystal. I think you all know that General McChrystal is on his way back to Washington. Will take part in tomorrow's planned Afghanistan meeting. He was recalled back to Washington to speak to Pentagon officials and to the president about the remarks that were made in that article.
How can the president keep someone in?
Filterfish Robert Gibbs, who looks like he's come out of a Manischewitz jar, talking about an article in a degenerate drug-promoting magazine, Rolling Stone, as the gospel. Listen now to the Gefilterfish continuing.
How can the president keep someone in his job who offers that level of insubordination? Does he plan to fire him?
Well,
hold it. Have you ever heard anything like this? Another degenerate in the news media piling on saying, oh, insubordination. Who is that vermin? Who is that vermin asking that loaded question? Play more of it. Go ahead. Play more.
How can the president keep someone in his job who offers that level of insubordination? Does he plan to fire him?
Well, the president will speak with General McChrystal.
Shut your mouth, you fat piece of garbage. Why don't you go over and fight in Afghanistan, you lying bum, you? You know what? I have an idea. Why don't all of the smart frat boys from Harvard go over and fight in Afghanistan? Why don't all the smart Alex who want McChrystal to be disappeared, why don't all of them put a uniform on and go over to Afghanistan since they know more about it than he does? Uh-huh. They don't want to give up the drug, sex, and rock and roll in the water guns? 1-800-449-8255. Michael Savage. A judge, by the way, has lifted the offshore drilling ban as overbearing. He has dared strike back at the all-knowing Obama, who is a genius on running automobile companies, a genius on medical care, a genius on oil drilling, a genius on military. Now, remember, this is a man who never created a hot dog stand, never ran a business, but he knows everything. Federal judge struck down the Obama administration's six-month ban on deepwater oil drilling in the Gulf of Mexico as rash and heavy-handed, saying the government simply assumed that because one rig exploded, the others posed an imminent danger as well. The blemished White House promised an immediate appeal. The blemished White House promised an immediate appeal. White House spokesmouth, the human gefilterfish, Robert Gibbs, said through his gills that President Barack Hussein Obama believes that until investigations can determine why the spill happened, continued deepwater drilling exposes work and the environment to a danger that the president does not believe he can afford, close quote. Well, this is something most of you don't know, but I've had it on my show for two and a half weeks now. There are at least seven foreign nations drilling in the Gulf of Mexico as we speak. They were not banned by Obama because he doesn't have the authority to do so. But how come they're drilling and their rigs haven't exploded? If every rig is so dangerous, Mr. Obama, why is it that Vietnam, Cuba, Russia, and about six other nations can still drill in the Gulf of Mexico? Same waters, Mr. Obama. It seems to me that you're unfairly criticizing this one company. Is it because you really don't want any American oil offshore, Mr. Obama? You'd rather we become even more beholden to the Saudis? Many people think that he actually wants green jobs. So far as I know, it wasn't the green people who put him in power. It was the hooded people with hooded eyes who put him in power. Portland, Oregon. Bill, you're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thank you for your patriotism and service to the American people. We're glad you're feeling well. Back on watch.
Thank you.
Basically, I wanted to take a different angle on this McChrystal thing. And first of all, we have to look at the type of man that he is. You and the other callers have already detailed that very well. He's comes from a great pedigree. He is the real deal. And what you have to understand about military men like this is that they don't do anything by accident. They don't get hoodwinked by, you know, little reporters that want to take a quote out of context and
flash. So what do you think? McChrystal purposely invited the drug addict to fly with him so he leaks some of these comments?
I think that's a very strong possibility because I believe that every man has his breaking point. While he may be a true American patriot and someone who defends the Constitution of the United States, he can also see from the catbird seat exactly what's going on in Afghanistan.
So he sees defeat and he didn't want to be the general who lost Afghanistan, so he'd rather leave, get thrown out, and let someone else take the fall? Is that it? That's an interesting theory.
Correct. Not just that, but it leads into the bigger issue that you've been addressing is why are we in Afghanistan? You can take a look at several of the things that have come up in the last couple of weeks, one of the biggest being the $1 trillion worth of minerals that they found over there. Well, all of a sudden, Afghanistan is rich in minerals. We want to build pipelines there. We need to be there to liberate the people and, you know, extend our democracy around the world. I think it's all a bunch of baloney, to be perfectly honest.
Democracy around the world. Do we have any here in this country with the dictator in the White House?
Good point, Michael.
We're going to extend democracy around the world? They're freer in Russia than we are here.
Exactly. Well,
the illegitimate president is talking about granting amnesty to illegal aliens by a trick? How in the world is that democracy?
Definitely not democracy. That's tyranny, like your previous caller had said. But I'll just add one more thing, and that is, I believe McChrystal probably did just enough to get himself removed from the position without actually having to be completely insubordinate or disobey direct orders. He did enough that it would raise the horns of Mr. Obama to come in and give him the axe. But you have to understand, this man has a family like everybody else. He's been basically the tip of the spear for how long now? And he's seeing what's going on and probably saying to himself, you know what? Enough of this. I understand the direction that they're taking to this the country, and I don't want any part of it. It could be the easiest way for him to get out, collect his pension, and enjoy the rest of his life without having to answer for disobeying direct orders or anything else he might have done, resigning from his position.
It's possible. Who will really know what he had in mind? I don't know that a hard-driving, type AAA, patriotic warrior would like to be dismissed by a man of the caliber of Obama from any position. I think it's a great disgrace for a suspicious character such as Obama to dismiss a general of such a high caste and such a high caliber, by the way. And I use that word pointedly. I mean, the man comes, if there's an aristocracy in America, McChrystal comes from it. Would you agree with that?
That's a very strong possibility.
See, people don't want to hear about that. They like to think we're all equal. We're not all equal. Don't tell me that the bub on the Bowery is the same as a Sterling Nobel Prize winner in physics. No, we're not all equal, as a matter of fact. The determination is what we do with our lives. Don't tell me we're all equal. We're not all equal. Take a look at the people we have in this country. Go watch Cops. Take a look who voted for Obama. Look at the people in Acorn. They can't add two and two, you idiots, you.
Savage.
General McChrystal.
McChrystal can't stay in his position. He's probably going to tender his resignation, and it's probably going to be accepted or demanded in the first place. He might stay. There are certain circumstances in which he might stay. Likely is not he is going to be gone, and he's probably going to wind up retiring. Yeah. And in the end, this is what the rank and file of the military establishment is going to say privately. They're going to say, absolutely right. You can't do this. You can't countenance your subordinates to speak to the press and say that the rest of the chain of command above you are a bunch of knuckleheads. But they're going to say, you know what? He was right.
What do you mean they can't say it? Why can't they say it? What if they're a bunch of degenerates? What if they're a bunch of morons? What if they're absolutely anti-constitutional? What do you mean he can't say it? What is it written in the Constitution that a general can't speak out? When did that become part of military code? Which dictatorial president said you can't criticize him? When did that begin? Under FDR? The last socialist president we had? Well, maybe McChrystal will retire or be fired, and he'll run for the presidency. How's that? He might be more popular than who we have now. There's no one else out there. Isn't that interesting? Wouldn't that be interesting if McChrystal is fired or retires, and the Republicans are smart enough to launch him as a presidential candidate? He would win hands down against Obama in a matchup today. I can guarantee it'll be 90-1. McChrystal wins hands down. And by the time an election came around, McChrystal, once America gets to see a true blue American again, it'd be 95-1. The illegal aliens would even vote for McChrystal over Obama. And remember where you heard it first. Boston, Bill, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, former captain of the Marine Corps, staunch conservative, staunch Republican, but I have a different opinion than yours on this McChrystal issue. General McChrystal showed bad judgment in bad mouthing.
Well, hold on. You're using the code words of Obama. What do you mean by bad judgment? What did he say that you feel is such bad judgment?
He criticized, in a juvenile way, Vice President Biden. And
he criticized Vice President Biden, a man who was seen on the lawn of his house with squirt guns 2 weeks ago? You find Biden a figure not to be criticized?
You tell me what Biden having a squirt gun in his hand has to do with anything.
Well, you just said that the general showed bad judgment. How about Biden showing worse judgment?
Well, that's the thing. See, Biden is the vice president. He's not bad mouthed.
So what? What the hell does that make him? Above the law? Politician, what the hell does that make him?
I'm not talking about Biden. The point is, General McChrystal is...
Well, I'm talking... I asked you, what did McChrystal do that was so egregious? So now you say he criticized the squirt gun vice president. What else did he do that was so bad?
He's responsible for his staff as well. He and his staff together showed poor judgment and did not show professionalism, and that's something that General...
You're using code words. What did he say that you find egregious, sufficient to be cashiered out of the military?
General McChrystal himself said he showed poor judgment and should not have...
I asked you what he said. You're reading from talking points. I know what you're doing. You're nothing but a stooge of the Obama administration. What, do you go to Harvard?
And I think that...
What are you, a student at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government up there? They gave you a talking point to call talk shows? I'm asking you again. Put down the talking points and tell the audience listening to this show, The Savage Nation, just exactly what McChrystal said that you find sufficient for him to be fired. Please, go ahead.
I'm saying everything that his age, he himself admitted.
I said to you again, repeat what he said that you find to be sufficient for him to be fired.
What did McChrystal say specifically?
Nothing. Yes. Nothing. So I rest my case. You're just spreading gossip that the Obama administration put out.
He's just fought before what
Take a walk. Go back to Harvard and smoke a joint, you loser, you. Go smoke a joint up in Cambridge up there, you bum, you. You're a captain in the military like my dog is a captain in the canine corps. Patricia, New York, WOR. Go ahead, please. Patricia, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
What I want to say, Michael, is that the chicks of New York, one of them, they should hold the president to the same standard that they wanted to hold McChrystal to. And therefore, the president needs to resign.
And well, what do you mean hold him to the same standard? I don't understand really what you're saying. I know you're a good person, but what are you saying? How have you added to the discussion today or advanced it in any way? I don't get it.
Okay. This is a president... I'm glad you asked that question, Michael. This is a president that has gone around the world and said the American people are arrogant. This is a president that has permitted Calderon to come to the United States and bash American people.
I see what you're saying. So he undermined the United States of America ever since he took office on his Hate America tour, on his Grovel America tour, etc. And so therefore, he's not even holding himself up to the same standards.
Correct. Not only
so, in other words, he's insubordinate to the American people.
Please.
He's insubordinate to the U.S. Constitution. Obama's fundamentally insubordinate to the office itself, is what you're saying.
I'm also saying something else. I'm saying that after deep analysis and watching and reading and listening, this is a man who believes he has a real grudge against the United States.
Yes, we know that. He and his wife really hate America. We can see that every time she speaks. That's why they've hidden her. They let her come out for an egg rolling contest, because every time she comes out, his ratings go down by about 8%. Thanks for the call. They take one look at Michelle's eyes, and everyone gets frightened all over again. But let's stick to the McChrystal issue. Why do you think McChrystal is being dismissed or resigned or resigning? I mean, when you actually look at what he said and who he criticized, they're very benign statements. I mean, I have the Rolling Stone article in my hand. He criticized Eikenberry, some low-life retired three-star general who served under him, who he served under, rather, in Afghanistan, who now hates McChrystal. You see, the ambassador, Eikenberry, is the man behind McChrystal's undoing. Eikenberry was in charge of McChrystal in 02 and 05, and he is apparently furious that McChrystal, by the way, is now above him. Do you understand that? And so he basically backstabbed him. So this guy Eikenberry is the kind of general who, as you well know, never fought in combat, the type of general who winds up working in Washington and working with the politicians. And so that's what we're facing right now. He also criticized one of the most checkered people in American history, that's Holbrooke, Richard Holbrooke, who single-handedly bombed Serbia mercilessly for 78 days and cheered it on, egged on the NATO bombers, which were U.S. warplanes, by the way, and bombed Serbia. It was Holbrooke behind that, and he criticized Holbrooke. He doesn't like Holbrooke. Holbrooke's holed up somewhere. God knows what kind of money he's making off this war. There are many other players that we'll never know about. We don't know what old Hank Kissinger has to do with any of this. I'm sure that if you turned over a few rocks, the spider would crawl out from underneath it somehow, and old Hank Kissinger would have something to do with it. I'm also positive that if you turned over another slimy rock somewhere in a latrine, Soros would crawl out from underneath it. He would swirl out from underneath that slimy rock, and you'd find it has something to do with money missing in Afghanistan, basically. So you have an honest man, a true blue American patriot, a fourth generation military man, a graduate of West Point, a true war hero, a man who went on many dangerous night missions in Iraq while Obama was creeping around the streets of Chicago planning his takeover of America. And now we have this man facing Obama. And I say if there was a matchup today at the ballot box, it would be 90-1 for McChrystal. 9 out of 10 people would vote for McChrystal over Obama. So I say, good, let's see this play itself out. At the end, it's going to backfire on Obama, the thin-skinned president. And I hope that the Republicans try to draft McChrystal for the presidency. Because I believe that McChrystal, once America gets to know this man, if they put enough money behind him, I think McChrystal could easily wipe the floors with any Democrat. And remember where you heard it first. It wasn't on the golfer show. No, remember where you heard it first. It's on the Savage Nation. But I doubt the Republicans would have the brains to bring in an outsider like this, because they only like to work with old boys and old girls. So I doubt very much that that'll actually happen. He'd be a perfect leader of a new American party, a Tea Party kind of, so to speak, you know, the American Party. Boy, would he win. Boy, would he win. I'd love to see him as president, but then I'm just dreaming. Why are we in Afghanistan? Why are we in Afghanistan? Should we leave Afghanistan? Is it time to get out of Afghanistan? Remember, I mean, I think it's a good idea to get out of there altogether. Get out, let Al-Qaeda come in, let them come in from New York, let them leave the taxi cabs and the grocery stores, let them all pour in Afghanistan and shoot the guns in the air and create a homeland for themselves, a new homeland of hatred, a new homeland of America hatred, and let them finally have a nation with a flag and an army of their own so we can do to them what they've been asking for about 40 years now. 30 years, and give them what we gave the Germans and the Japanese. I'll be right back.
Savage.
me ask you a question if you're listening to the show. Who do you trust more to lead the troops in Afghanistan, General McChrystal or the community organizer, Obama? I don't understand how you can even not understand what's going on here. He made a few mild criticisms of a few of the doofuses in the administration, and that's sufficient to fire a man? What, do you want to live in a dictatorship? Are you people that stupid? You want no criticism of Obama, no matter what he may or may not do? No criticism of Biden? No criticism of an ambassador? What country do you live in? So something doesn't add up here. New York, WOR. Cameron, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Good evening, Doc. You're going right at this in the right way, except it goes beyond your understanding, I think. In other words, I don't know what's going on here, but I...
Wait, you don't know what's going on there, but you know it goes beyond what I know? How does that work?
Well, here's how it works. This is what I think is going on. You never know for sure because...
But you just said I don't know what's going on, and you don't know what's going on, but you're sure you know more than I do, so share it with millions of people.
Well, here it is. This guy, Stanley McChrystal, is as close to the George Washington as we're going to find. In other
words, in our generation, he's as close to the true blue as we're ever going to get again. Right, I agree with that.
That's right, and I think that this man knows full well what he did. He did it intentionally. He expects to get fired and had to do this out of loyalty for love of country. This is a true patriot and a warrior.
Now, what did he actually do? He made a few mild, benign remarks about Biden, the squirt gun vice president, and Ambassador Holbrooke. What did he actually say that was so vile? Nothing, when you analyze it.
Well, to the men in uniform, and my Army career didn't involve heroism, but I was trained as a military intelligence analyst, MOS 96B20. And to the military mind, looks at that differently. In other words, you look at it in a civilian fashion, Doc.
I understand the rules are such that you're not supposed to ever question the chain of command. I get it. I understand that. But what did he actually say that was so... offensive to the thin one, to the thin-skinned one in the White House?
It's not a question of offensive. It goes to insubordination, and it goes to...
So in other words, if he is told to drop an atomic bomb on Kabul, he does that?
According to...
So in other words, if a general is told to drop an atomic bomb on Kabul, and he says, wait a minute, I don't want to kill 3 million Afghanis, and he goes to a newspaper, he should be fired for that?
That's correct. In other words, his role is to...
I see. And if another general is told to bring troops to the United States of America and to round up dissidents and put them into a concentration camp, and the general says, I won't do that, that's a violation of the Constitution, that general should be fired as well?
Well, that's why you're going straight at this now, because he can see that the orders given to him and his colleagues in the military are purely destructive of the representative republic we have here. And so he's displaying his patriotism by doing things that he knows will cause his firing in order to get...
Okay, let's take your theory. So what he wants is a healthy debate about why are we in Afghanistan?
Yes, but it goes beyond that. But he sees all the other destructive mechanisms. Look at this ruling on the Don't Ask, Don't Tell abolition. This is very important. This hurt him deeply.
Yes. And you know Obama, who he's hosting in the White House tonight, don't you?
Doesn't matter. We know what Obama...
No, the very same crowd, the very same crowd from Los Angeles that you just mentioned is having a shindig in the White House tonight. They're celebrating their bacchanal in the White House tonight. So, yes, I understand, but you don't think it's all over don't ask, don't tell, do you?
No, it's just another... insult to...
All right, so you believe McChrystal did it purposely. Who would know? I can't second guess the other man. But remember my surmisal, he should run for office. I mean, I would say draft McChrystal now. And he should run as a third party candidate. He should never be contaminated by the Republican Party, the party of John McCain, the party that gave us John McCain. He shouldn't. No, honest to God, I would donate money right now. I'd donate a week's pay to his campaign if he really wanted to be president. What do you think? Politicians are born, they're made. Right now, McChrystal is a politician. Do you know that by Friday, this man will be very, very well known in this country? And I can tell you in a matchup right now, 9 out of 10 people would vote for McChrystal over Obama. They'd vote for McChrystal over any of the other clowns that the Republicans are planning. Let's play Obama on McChrystal right now. Oh, in a few seconds, we have a new Obama clip on McChrystal. It'll be ready in about 20 seconds. Apparently, this is a new speech that the thin-skinned one gave today prior to the Bacchanal in the White House for the Don't Ask, Don't Tell crowd. Let's hear it.
You know, General McChrystal is on his way here, and I am going to meet with him. Secretary Gates will be meeting with him as well. I think it's clear that the article in which he and his team appeared showed poor judgment, but I also want to make sure that I talk to him directly before
I take a look at the country you're living in today. You have an asinine president who is basing foreign policy now and war policy on an article in a degenerate drug-promoting magazine, Rolling Stone. Listen to this. I want you to see the bigger picture. I want you to understand how far we have fallen, what you have in the White House. You have a clown in the White House who is now saying he's making a decision, a military decision, based upon an article written in a drug-promoting magazine called Rolling Stone. How do you like that? How do you like that? Did you ever think that you'd wake up to a day like that? That everything would be upside down? It's Alice in Wonderland. The man is upside down. And by the way, if he held himself to the same standards and we played some of the speeches he gave in China or in Saudi Arabia with him bending over with a gold chain on his neck, one might say he was insubordinate to the U.S. Constitution and the office of the presidency and that he ought to be fired. We, the people, should say you ought to be fired, but, you know, we don't have that power. Only the great one has that power. Only the thin-skinned one has that power. Only the man from unknown origins has that power. Only the man who has an origin that we don't even know where it is. We know where McChrystal's birth certificate resides. We know where McChrystal was born. We know where McChrystal's father was a U.S. general loyal to America. We can't say the same thing about Barack Hussein Obama's father, can we? Who fled back to Kenya and died an alcoholic. Does that matter to you? Well, it should matter to you. That's why you're having this trouble. Parentage means a lot. Parentage means a lot. It means a lot in a dog. It means even more in a man. Many of you understand that. Oh, you're real picky on the AKC papers of a dog, aren't you? Oh, my dog was the son of this one and the daughter of that one. My dog came from this and that. But you don't care anything about where your politicians come from? You don't care anything about who their parents or their grandparents were and whether or not they were loyal to this country, but you care where your dog came from? It's the same thing with what you feed your dog. You probably feed your dog better than you do your child. I guarantee you most of you wouldn't give your dog cocoa and a pastry in the morning, but you give it to your daughter, who becomes a hyperactive lunatic 2 hours later in the classroom, so you give her Ritalin. It's an upside-down nation of drug addicts. Prozac nation, a nation of sick people. A nation has been boiled down to the lowest common denominator. Listen to this. President says he showed poor judgment based upon an article in a drug-promoting magazine. I know, why doesn't he quote an article in High Times next and base his foreign policy on an article from High Times that he was reading in the toilet that one of his staffers from Harvard left a copy of High Times in the presidential john, and the president read it while he visited the same loo, and he was in there reading the magazine. He read in High Times someone said a negative thing about Michelle's sleeveless outfits, and based upon that, that person must be immediately called on the carpet and come before him and sit down in front of him and it'd be Puss in Boots. Puss in Boots, that's right, that's what it's going to be. The general, of course, is Boots. I'll let you figure out who Puss is. This is the Savage Nation. The topic is McChrystal. The question is, who do you trust more, McChrystal or Obama?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
is his view not only about the president, but about Joe Biden, about Jim Jones, the National Security Advisor, about Carl Eikenberry, on and on down the list, Richard Holbrooke.
Those views are very widely held, by the way, in the military and outside the military about those people. I mean, that they are ineffective, that Jim Jones, the National Security Advisor, does not have an impact on, on national security policy, that he has very little access, that Holbrooke hasn't done anything, and so on. Those views are widely held. They're not just held by McChrystal's staff.
Today there was a civilian coup against the military, a civilian coup against the imposter. Obama, the community organizer, knows more about running a war in Afghanistan. You hear? He knows more about war than General McChrystal, a fourth-generation military officer, a man who runs 7 miles a day, eats one meal a day, an absolute Spartan warrior. And this character from the gutters of Chicago or Indonesia or Kenya or Hawaii, wherever the hell he's from, the lord of everything, wants to fire General Stanley McChrystal, persecuting the general for telling the truth to the community organizer. And yet the vermin in the media have been sharpening their knives all day long, eagerly anticipating being able to move in for the kill. The brain-dead apparatchik Contessa Brewer on MSNBC said that McChrystal had a cowboy attitude, and he had a disdain for authority, and that the generals surrounding him were a posse. Do you hear this? Andy Mitchell, you know her as Andrea Mitchell, we call her Andy around here, declared that McChrystal crossed the line of insubordination. And Joe Sestak, the congressman Obama bribed, said McChrystal broke military code. Well, damn it, it's about time somebody broke the military code and call this imposter what he is. What did McChrystal actually say? He attacked Joe Biden as short-sighted. McChrystal's aides attacked National Security Advisor Jim Jones as a clown and compared the war criminal Richard Holbrooke to a wounded animal. By the way, Richard Holbrooke is the same hatchet man who committed the war crime of bombing the Serbian civilian nation for 80 straight days under Clinton, the same Holbrooke, who, by the way, allegedly profited off this. According to the article, McChrystal thought Obama appeared uncomfortable and intimidated by the room filled with military brass. No kidding. No kidding. And McChrystal said he felt betrayed by the Obama administration. In other words, General McChrystal and his staff has said what any ordinary American with half a brain can see with their own eyes. What is that? That Obama's an incompetent commander. That Obama doesn't want to win. That Obama is undermining the troops. Furthermore, McChrystal is a real soldier. He's the real McCoy. Graduated from West Point. Obama graduated from Ponahoo. He served in Army Special Ops in the first Gulf War while Obama was in the streets of Chicago putting up posters. He was the head of the team that killed al-Zarqawi while Obama was killing America. If anyone has the right to criticize this administration on how they've handled Afghanistan, it's McChrystal. You see, Obama's not only not been in the military, Obama's never fired a Daisy BB gun. Hillary Clinton has never been in the military. Joe Biden has never been in the military. They're all lawyers! And yet, when a real soldier and a real man dares to speak out and say that the empty suits and the empty skirts who are running this country are screwing up the war, it's the soldier who gets in trouble. And it's the liar-in-chief who never fired a BB gun in his life who calls that soldier back to the White House to apologize to him. Lord of the flies, indeed. The White House has betrayed the troops time and time again. Obama betrayed the Navy SEALs. He betrayed Lieutenant Behenna. And now he's betraying the leader of our forces in Afghanistan. This is Obama's way of undermining our military efforts overseas. What is occurring now is a civilian coup of the military. And because of it, our troops will pay the price in blood. I'm Michael Savage. And by the way, there must be more to the story. There's much more to this story. I believe there are rumblings within the military from the real warriors who know that there's been a coup in this country. A coup by Harvard communists and Chicago thugs and gangsters and money changers who've taken over America. And Obama knows they know. And that's why he's acting this way. We'll keep talking about this and other topics on the show today, but let's stop for a minute. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at trn1.com today. Now let's go back in history for a minute. McChrystal was given an unwinnable war. Why do I say that? Well, let's go back in history. The Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan on December 24, 1979. The Soviet occupation resulted in the killings of between 600,000 and 2 million civilians. Over 5 million fled as Afghan refugees, mostly to Pakistan and Iran. Over 38,000 Afghanis made it to the U.S. And what happened? Faced with mounting international pressure and great losses in Afghanistan, the Soviets withdrew in 1989. In other words, they were defeated. What happened before that? Well, let's go back in time. The first war, the Anglo-Afghan War, lasted from 1839 to 1842. And who lost? The British were forced to leave Afghanistan after losing 12,000 men. The second Anglo-Afghan War refers to a war between the UK and Afghanistan that lasted from 1878 to 1880. And what happened there? Do you know what happened there? I'll tell you what happened there. What happened? The British withdrew. The third Anglo-Afghan War began on May 6, 1919 and ended with an armistice on August 8, 1919. Considered a minor tactical victory for the British, well, the Afghans actually won the right to conduct their own foreign affairs as a fully independent state. Nobody can beat these tribal cutthroats unless we use nuclear weapons, which nobody is willing to do. So that's the story. That's the story. A great hero, McChrystal, driven out by a great imposter, a thin-skinned great imposter, Obama, Lord of the Flies. So here we are. I'm glad that I have a forum and I have a microphone and I can, you know, tell you like it is the way I see it. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Joining us now with the Savage Nation is Jack Hunter.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, Michael. I wanted to talk a little bit about our friend, mine and yours, Michael, Chris Matthews over at MSNBC. And, of course, I say that in jest. Of course, he's the host of the liberal show Hardball over there, in which all things liberal are espoused on a regular basis. Well, Chris Matthews took it upon himself last week to run an hour-long special called The Rise of the New Right. Now, what could this possibly be? Well, we saw the commercials throughout the week, you know, images of Tea Partiers and grassroots conservatives up in arms about spending. Well, you know, for a conservative like myself, this is very encouraging that people are up in arms about government spending and getting serious about their conservatism. Not so much for Chris Matthews, and his special exemplified this.
Well, like what?
First of all, the special starts off, as you might expect, with people holding signs. This would be Tea Partiers and grassroots activists and town hall protesters likening President Obama to Adolf Hitler and other tyrannical dictators. And, of course, to someone like Chris Matthews and his liberal friends over there, like Rachel Maddow and Keith Olbermann, this just means that all hell is breaking loose, that there's something wrong with Tea Partiers at large, because some people go to the extreme of likening Barack Obama to Adolf Hitler or some communist dictator. Well, it's worth noting that when Charlie Crist left the GOP in Florida, and let's face it, he left because Marco Rubio, the Tea Party anointed challenger there, forced him out of the party because Crist could not win the Republican primary. This is what Chris Matthews had to say about that purging, if you will, and I quote, "What happens to Republicans who don't march to the right-wing tune? Well, they're getting purged. This is Stalin-esque, this stuff," says Chris Matthews about the Florida GOP. So right from the start, Chris Matthews is already choking on his own hypocrisy, that somehow the Tea Partiers are going a step beyond by bringing communist dictators and Nazi dictators into the mix, when Chris Matthews has already done that, and I would add, does it on a more regular basis than he would like to admit.
Exactly.
The truth is that in the mind of somebody like Chris Matthews, the left is supposed to be represented by people like the Kennedy family, and the right should be represented by people like the Bush family. And anything outside of that Washington-wide circle of elites is not only too fringe, but a threat to America as we know it. Now, of course, Matthews is right in a sense.
Why is that?
The Tea Partiers out there, those who are non-elitist, the populist grassroots right, are a threat to America as we know it, and Chris Matthews knows it, in the sense that the America as we know it is literally bankrupt. That's the entire point. That's what the Tea Party is all about, and so many Americans who are sympathetic to them. What is ridiculous is that Matthews is not only appalled but disturbed that this new populist anger might actually be directed towards the same elites who got us into this mess. He doesn't connect the dots where they should be connected. Where does he connect the dots? Well, the ridiculous Matthews draws a line from Senator Joe McCarthy and the John Birch Society in the 50s and 60s to today's grassroots conservatives and talk radio, sort of outlining the dangers of populism. Now, what Matthews does not do is bother to consider whether any of these protests from the right could have been back then or ever could be now justified. What do I mean by that? Well, think about this. If in the past figures like Joe McCarthy or the founder of the John Birch Society, Robert Welch, were mistaken in their belief that our government had been infiltrated by communists, Matthews fails to mention that such paranoia, such craziness that comes out sometimes, was really born of a wider concern amongst conservatives about the massive growth of the state, particularly in a post-New Deal and later Great Society of America.
Why?
Well, there was widespread concern by conservatives at that time that, I don't know, programs like Social Security and Medicare might one day come back to haunt us. Now, fast forward to 2010, far away from Joe McCarthy and the John Birch Society, where Chris Matthews would like to keep the conservative movement, there is a widespread bipartisan consensus of both parties that we all agree that Social Security and Medicare are insolvent, that it is a top-heavy system we're going to have to address. Now, given the eccentricities of Joe McCarthy and the John Birch Society, does that still mean that in the 40s and 50s and 60s, conservatives concerned about Social Security and concerned about Medicare were wrong? Or today have they been proven right? Now, I bring that up because Matthews brings that up, the Joe McCarthy and John Birch Society example, to tar today's conservatives. So I ask you today, are Tea Partiers today wrong to be concerned about a $13 trillion debt, of which Social Security and Medicare contribute greatly to, I might add, despite the eccentricities of some of its members today, or perhaps outlandish language on talk radio? You see what I'm getting at. The hypocrisy is overwhelming as it concerns Matthews and his portrayal of the right. I would also add, if we're talking about paranoia and being afraid of these different threats, whether in the past or the present, is it possible that a liberal like Chris Matthews is just as paranoid about the danger posed by talk radio and the Tea Party? Oh, I don't know, as perhaps Joe McCarthy and the John Perchers were about the danger posed by the U.S. government. Is there not enough paranoia to go around there? Matthews would like us to believe that this sort of right-wing anger, past or present, is always born of irrational fear, but I would point out that so is the left's fear of conservative anger, often paranoid and irrational. And Matthew's special is a perfect example of this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, columnist E.J. Dion, writing for Real Clear Politics, makes a very good point, but he's doing it from a negative perspective. E.J. Dion shares many of the same concerns Chris Matthews does in his program, The Rise of the New Right, which Matthews considers ominous. Writes E.J. Dion, agreeing with Matthews, quote, "The rise of the Tea Party movement is a throwback to an old form of libertarianism that seems most of the domestic policies that government has undertaken since the New Deal is unconstitutional." Well, guess what? E.J. Dion is absolutely right. Now, he thinks that's a problem, that somehow conservatism is less respectable and too fringe and too extreme. That's exactly the point, E.J. Dion. That's exactly the point, Chris Matthews, that it is an older, more traditional, anti-statist, anti-New Deal, constitutional conservatism. That's what we've gotten away from. I think it's absolutely wonderful that today's right, whether at the grassroots or otherwise, increasingly has more to do with the philosophy of Barry Goldwater, or even some of the more radical anti-FDR conservatives that preceded him, than, oh, I don't know what was happening during the Nixon administration. I'm a fan of Ronald Reagan, but I know budgets exploded during that time, and certainly not the so-called compassionate conservatism that we saw under George W. Bush. Is that what Chris Matthews or E.J. Dion consider respectable? If the rise of the new right represents a break from the Nelson Rockefellers or their latter-day counterparts, bring it on. I think that's what we all want. We would all like to see that Barry Goldwater philosophy that E.J. Dion or Chris Matthews just think is so detestable come back into fashion, and it looks like it is, thank God.
Right.
The entire subtext to Chris Matthews' special, The Rise of the New Right, which I would prefer to call The Return of the Real Right, though he wouldn't see it that way. Let's take a look at just his perspective from a different perspective, if you will, Chris Matthews. On a program of Hardball, an episode of Hardball in April, Chris Matthews went on this long rant about how people who run third party really screw up the two-party system. His example was Ralph Nader in 2000, and he concluded that third parties suck. He does not like third parties because how they mess up the two-party system. Now, not long after that diatribe, when Charlie Crist, as I mentioned earlier, left the GOP in Florida because he was challenged by Marco Rubio, sort of the Tea Party anointed challenger, Chris Matthews really didn't have much of a problem with that. So I would suggest that Matthews' aversion to third parties is not really his disenchantment with the possibility of voters having more than two choices on a ballot, but the promotion of any candidate who might disrupt the political center of either party. Likewise, his seeming comfort with Chris' decision to run third party, I think, reflects the same attachment to sort of the political status quo, his love affair with Washington, D.C., and more importantly, his nasty reaction to anything outside of it. That is the subtext, the meaning of that stupid, ridiculous portrayal of conservatives, The Rise of the New Right, in a nutshell.
Thanks for the report, Jack.
Well, I always appreciate being with you, Michael, and you can learn about this and more at SouthernAvenger.com.
Savage.
I'm the great pretender.
Can you characterize at all the president's reaction to hearing that Aides McChrystal called Vice President Biden bite me? McChrystal advisor said Obama clearly didn't know anything about McChrystal when they first met. Here's a guy who's going to run his effing war. He didn't seem very engaged. The boss was pretty disappointed.
He'll have his undivided attention tomorrow.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender.
According to an unnamed source, General McChrystal has just submitted his resignation. This is on the eve of a major offensive in Kandahar. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, this will backfire on Obama the Magnificent. Most Americans know he's an imposter, and all Americans know he's incapable of running the military. And so this is a bad black eye for Obama. A very, very bad day for Obama indeed. This arrogant, thin-skinned imposter has now gotten rid of the head of the military offensive in Afghanistan. And strangely enough, I told you God sees the truth but waits. There's a picture going around of a fly landing on Barack Obama's face as he delivered lying remarks on his health care act today in the East Room of the White House. There's a picture of a fly landing on Obama's face. If you can't read the signs, why don't you let me help you? Let me help you. God just threw a fly on Obama's lip.
Pretending that you're still around.
We have talked quite often on how past generations understood what it meant to be an American and the sacrifices they made for us compared to what we see today. Given the anti-American, anti-military sentiments running through the White House and the media today, our next guest, Rita Cosby, has written a book about the sacrifices made in World War II entitled Quiet Hero. Rita Cosby, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks so much for having me on today. This is definitely, Michael, the most important story I will ever tell in my life. And I think it comes down to what it means to be an American, what it means to fight for freedom, and also just the incredible courage of that whole generation. I picked the title Quiet Hero to talk about my dad, but it really also exemplifies that whole incredible generation and also our men and women who are fighting on the front lines right now for freedom, you know, our troops who I don't feel get enough credit out there. And this book, I hope, will be a great tribute to them, too. And, you know, my father's story, which I didn't know until recently, is so inspiring. And it also is what it exemplifies what it means to stand up for something. And it's what you do, I think, every night on the air so well. It's believing in something. It's fighting for it. It's standing on principle. And my father did it at an incredibly early age and at an incredible cost. you know, to him, his friends, and his family.
Well, like what?
You know, I have learned that my father was a really heroic resistance fighter who was literally thrust into the beginning of World War II. I mean, he remembers when he was 13 years old and he was outside with his father. And his father said, hey, look at all the planes above. Isn't it great the Polish Air Force is doing exercises today? And my father said, you know, Dad, I don't think that's the Polish military. I think those planes came from the West. And then the next thing they know, the German bombs are dropping all over Warsaw right before their eyes. So my father physically saw the beginning of World War II. And then they were trying to flee the Nazis, heading towards the Romanian border. They go into a store, and on the radio, they get wind that the communists are coming from the other direction. Can you imagine, like, what a terrible day it must have been to decide, do we go closer to the communists or do we head back towards the Nazis? And they had to make that horrible decision, decide where to go. And if you look at the history of Poland, there was such, you know, animosity between the Russians and the Poles that they didn't want to go towards the Russians, so they turned around and went back towards the Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
They found their home totally, totally leveled. And then my father decided to join the resistance. He first was writing anti-Nazi, you know, propaganda and graffiti outside the ghetto walls, which at an early age was truly a death sentence. I mean, it didn't matter how old you were, they still would have killed you. And then he started distributing anti-Nazi bulletins and flyers all over town. And then he became a full-fledged resistance fighter and took up arms and was fighting with everything that he had. And you know what I think is so incredible about my father's story, and I think is such a great, like, lesson about morals and standing up for principles. My father, because he's not Jewish, he could have gotten snuck out of the country. His mother said to him when he was about 15 years old, I might be able to sneak you out. I may have enough money on the black market and may be able to get you to Switzerland and get you out of this country and out of this hell. And my father said, no, I am staying and fighting. I would rather live with friends and die with friends than go to strangers. And can you imagine just the fortitude at that age to say, I'd rather die with friends than go to strangers and live with strangers? It's incredible to hear that kind of wherewithal. And my dad was just 15 years old, and he said, I am staying and fighting for my country and fighting for freedom. And he almost gave his life for it and was willing to give his life for it if that's what it took.
Why do you think these types of stories are not even heard anymore?
I mean, I do think the media, and you know, I'm a journalist, I think we're all responsible for often reporting the bad news and not highlighting these tremendous acts of heroism, especially everyday heroes like my father. And I also think in my father's case, there was an extraordinary circumstance, too. He did not want to speak about it. And I think that that's sort of typical of that whole generation. There's something about, there's this amazing, enormous humility and, you know, incredible, like, grace and dignity of, I want all the attention to be on somebody else. They're the heroes, not me. And my father definitely lived that kind of life and didn't want to talk about it. And I also think in my father's case, Michael, too, my father, it was so painful for my dad because of what he went through. I mean, he lost so many friends fighting on the front lines. And I think it was very hard for him to go back and revisit that pain. He sort of compartmentalized it. You know, and it was easier for him to, you know, put it all sort of in a little box. He moved over to America, changed his name from Richard Kozabutsky to Richard Cosby, and became Richard Cosby. And it was easier not to sort of talk about it. And then when I revisited this with him, I made this discovery. I found this suitcase that had a worn and torn, you know, Polish armband, you know, also a POW tag, a rusty POW tag, that it was emblazoned Stalag 4B and a prisoner number, and then a card of an ex-POW, Richard Kozabutsky. And I made all these discoveries in this old suitcase recently, and that's what opened the floodgates. And I think my father, being 84 years old, he was ready to talk, ready to share the story. We had a bit of a disconnected relationship, and I think he was so happy I reached out to him and saw this as a way to get closer to his daughter, which I think is so great, you know, being that it's Father's Day, heading towards Father's Day now, that it's such, you know, perfect timing. And I think, you know, I think he saw this as a time to get closer to the people he loved and maybe had some regrets in life that he had been disconnected emotionally. And I think a lot because of what he went through in the war.
Well, how did he finally get out?
Well, my father's story is so amazing. And I picked the word, you know, quiet hero for the title because his story is so just awe-inspiring and overwhelming when you think about the odds that they had. Can you imagine? They're fighting up against the Nazis, and they had two guns in their whole unit. My father was one of two guys with a gun. And they also had Molotov cocktails and sticks. and they're fighting up against one of the most vicious war machines in the world, the Nazis. And can you imagine someone saying, charge, you know? I mean, just talk about a David and Goliath fight. And my father at one point talks about it one night, how they were surrounded by the Nazis, so much tracer fire coming at them at night that it looked like daytime. And ultimately, they had no place to escape. The only place that they were out, they were told by their commanders, look, you know, you're not going to be able to go above ground. You're not going to be able to go on the ground. We're going to have to go below ground. And they escaped through the sewers. And can you imagine what that must have been like? But that was it. It was go down in the sewers or die. And they literally did. My dad was one of the last men out. And then he lived to fight another day, was seriously injured. And then he was taken at gunpoint by the Nazis to a POW camp in Germany. And this is after all those years of war. I mean, you know, you can imagine. And there he is. And at he's 90 pounds, 6 feet tall, Michael. And he sells his shirt. He has a suit that he's wearing. He sells it in the camp for a loaf of bread and shares it with his comrades so they would have enough energy to escape. And they escape. They get wind that the Russians are coming. The last thing they wanted to do was be greeted by the Russians. They didn't think it would be a greeting at all because they were getting wind that the Russians were coming close to the camp. It's April 1945. They get wind through a hidden radio in the camp that the Americans are still far away. And they said, we can't be greeted by the Russians. They're not going to treat POWs, especially Polish POWs, kindly. And they said, we got to get out of here. So they escaped. They got through the barbed wire. They cut through it, cut through the wire, went through it. They're in the woods for several days. And my favorite part of the story, Michael, and to me, this is, I think, what America is all about. And I think your listeners, you know, they're such patriots. They love this country. And my father, I think, is one of the most proud Americans you will ever meet because of this moment I'm about to tell you. My father, here he is, you know, again, 90 pounds, 6 feet tall. They're in the woods, and then they get on a little country road. They've been outside. You know, it's scary outside. You know, it's horrible in the camp. But then outside the camp, there's SS everywhere, Germans everywhere. They're in Germany. You know, it's in the middle, still in the war.
Right, right, right.
So they're roaming around, and a plane comes by. And they dive for the ditches, thinking, okay, this is a German Stuka plane, and this is it. And the plane drops something out, and they think it's a grenade. So they, you know, they get very worried. The plane comes by again. And then all of a sudden, they realize there's a star on the plane. And that it's an American plane. And what they dropped out, what the pilot dropped out, was actually a chocolate bar with a note wrapped around it, tied with a red ribbon. And they ran over to it. And when they realized what it was, they opened it up and they saw the note. And there was a note from the American military. It said, "Welcome. You're safe to walk now during daytime. There are no troops between you and our lines, no German troops between you and our lines. You have 15 miles to walk, and you're free." And so there was my dad after all those years of war, you know, 90 pounds, 6 feet tall. He's free. And he said at that point, he wanted to come to America.
Sure.
That he said, this is the greatest country in the world. And I want to come here and I want to be an American citizen. And I want to say thank you to those men who did so much for me. And when my father, you know, ran at that point 15 miles and came to a riverbed and saw these young American GIs hugging him and saying, you're free, you know, your nightmare's over. My dad knew that, you know, he was going to live, and that was the beginning for him, and his hell was over, and it was because of the American military. And part of our proceeds from our book, Quiet Hero, Secrets from My Father's Past, and you can go to the website, by the way, it's quiethero.org, quiethero.org has all the information, and you can get the book and all the information of the charities, but the main charity that we're giving to is the USO. And it's a new program called Operation Enduring Care. And it's to help wounded soldiers and their families, because there is not a day that goes by that my father doesn't say, thank God for America. Thank God America liberated the world. And thank God we live in the greatest country on earth.
Rita Cosby, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thanks so much. It's so great to be with you and your listeners. It's a real pleasure.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
White House and the illegitimate left-wing media have spent all day attacking General Stanley McChrystal, the commander of our troops in Afghanistan. First, the ditzy moron Contessa Brewer, the brainless empty skirt on MSNBC started in on him.
The article is titled The Runaway General. It really does make him sound like this is a guy who's a lone wolf, and whatever it takes, whatever kind of leaking memos and cowboy attitude it's going to take to get his idea of what will be a successful approach done.
Horrible words from someone who never came within a mile of a military firing range.
Were you surprised at the level of access that your reporter, Michael Hastings, was able to get to General McChrystal and to his posse?
We really got unprecedented access, and part of it was through kind of a freak of nature. Michael Hastings met with the general in Paris, and then he was supposed to go on to Berlin, but he got grounded because of the volcano in Iceland. So we wound up getting several weeks with him on the road to Berlin and then to Kabul and Kandahar to the front lines.
And then there was the old hag, Andrea Mitchell. You know who she is, don't you? Her old man ran the FCC while America was being bankrupted. In more sane times, they'd be called up on war crimes trials.
Oh, I think it crosses the line of insubordination, and it crosses the line of the military code of justice. He has challenged the commander-in-chief, and legally, morally, ethically, professionally, he ought to be canned. Now, the question is whether practically you can fire the top commander at a time when the war is, really, talk about inflection points.
Right.
This war is at a very bad stage. He himself is quoted as describing Marja as a bleeding ulcer.
And it was only a matter of time before the human gefilte fish in a jar, Robert Gibbs, the spokesmouth for Obama, came out and made a statement.
McChrystal were not so vital to the mission in Afghanistan. Would this be an easy decision?
I will say, Chip, I think that I think our efforts in Afghanistan are bigger than one person.
Were you with the president when he reacted in any way to this story? And if so, how would you describe it? Was he surprised? Was he angry?
I gave him the article last night, he was angry.
Yeah. How so?
Angry. You would know it if you saw it.
And listen to the circling vultures of the press corps. You'd think Helen Thomas was still there.
How can the president keep someone in his job who offers that level of insubordination? Does he plan to fire him?
Well, the president will speak with General McChrystal about his comments, and we'll have more to say after that meeting.
Is McChrystal's job safe?
We'll have more to say after that meeting.
What we need is a real general, more patent and less patent leather.
What's the matter with you?
I guess I just can't take it, sir.
What did you say?
It's my nerves, sir. I just can't stand the shelling anymore.
Your nerves? Well, hell, you're just a coward. We would have a yellow bastard sitting here crying in front of these brave men who've been wounded in battle. Shut up! Don't admit this yellow bastard. Nothing wrong with him. We won't have... We're afraid to fight, stinking up this place of honor. You're going back to the front, my friend. You may get shot, you may get killed, but you're going up to the fighting. Either that or I'm going to stand you up in front of a firing squad. I ought to shoot you myself, bastard. Get him out of here. Send him up to the front. You hear me? You coward! We won't have cowards in my army.
And yet there are some in the media, including retired Colonel Jack Jacobs, who know that McChrystal was right.
Is his view not only about the president, but about Joe Biden, about Jim Jones, the National Security Advisor, about Carl Eikenberry, on and on down the list, Richard Holbrooke.
Those views are very widely held, by the way, in the military and outside the military about those people. I mean, that they are ineffective, that Jim Jones, the National Security Advisor, does not have an impact on national security policy, that he has very little access, that Holbrooke hasn't done anything, and so on. Those views are widely held. They're not just held by McChrystal's staff. General McChrystal can't stay in his position. He's probably going to tender his resignation, and it's probably going to be accepted or demanded in the first place. He might stay. There are certain circumstances in which he might stay. Likely is not he is going to be gone, and he's probably going to wind up retiring.
Yeah.
And in the end, this is what the rank and file of the military establishment is going to say privately. They're going to say, absolutely right. You can't do this. You can't countenance your subordinates to speak to the press and say that the rest of the chain of command above you are a bunch of knuckleheads. But they're going to say, you know what? He was right.
Here's what's on MichaelSavage.com, the whole McChrystal story, including the full Rolling Stone interview. how he let those scum-sucking, verminous, drug-taking, left-wing, backstabbing, anti-American degenerates in Rolling Stone near him, I'll never understand. Democrat strategist defends Arab ambassador's lavish dinner. Very extravagant event. While the oil gushed, there was an extravagant Arab-funded dinner at the White House. The slippery slope to hell. There are many, many other stories on michaelsavage.com, and I can't read all of them to you. Somali Muslim leaders order all men to grow beards. Huh? U.S. spent $2 million on a study promoting condoms in Kazakhstan. Arizona police officers receive a threat from the Mexican cartel. Well, the Mexican drug cartel is in good league because they're on the same side as the Obama administration. You know what I mean, Beowulf?
No kidding.
I mean, You would think if we had a legitimate presidency, he would back the Arizona police officer and say we're sending in the military. This illegitimate government attacks Arizona and the Arizona police.
I guess the only law that exists is that which the president declares.
Gold jumped another $10 today, by the way. And as far as I'm concerned, Healing Children Naturally, my book on health and nutrition for children, the A to Z natural approaches for natural complaints, is the gold standard, only on michaelsavage.com. Savage.